right here, right now. Every day, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city. Toronto.
This program is sponsored by A Different Book List. Located at 779 Bathurst Street, A Different Book List is an African-Canadian-owned bookstore specializing in the rich literature of African and Caribbean diaspora and the Global South. For more information, visit www.adifferentbooklist.com.
Good morning. Welcome. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor. You might have experienced what Paul Simon calls the sounds of silence. Sobering times. The headline in the Globe and Mail pretty much does it. with one of them. It's war in Iran. We need to correct that. War on Iran. But they went with war in Iran. And it, their subhead first is U.S. and Israel intensify attacks after assassinating Supreme Leader Khamenei. Trump vows to avenge American troops killed in counteroffensive. So this would be what Ramsey Clark used to call the crime of resisting assault. And then conflict swells as Tehran fires retaliatory strikes across Persian Gulf. Retaliating is you're not allowed to defend yourself unless you happen to be Israel. And Israel can defend itself, as the prime minister says. Nobody else, of course, has any such privilege. And that is sanctified by no one. What is taking place is a war of aggression by two superpowers. There are superpowers. Take my hat off to them. They are loaded to the teeth with everything you could possibly have at this point in history to slaughter people and to exercise your authority over the range of your missiles and the power of your destruction that you can bring to bear. It's the terrible times that such things go on, and leaders, people called leaders, are mealy-mouthed and looking the other way. There's a proverb that another person's problems hang from a single thread. And so the humanitarian responsibilities and all that can be ignored, covered over by verbiage. One of the reasons we have intellectuals who work for governments is that they're very good at creating sentences and paragraphs that rationalize brutal, heinous conduct, such as what we're witnessing, where the international institutions are mocked and laughed at, and then purported leaders of so-called middle powers say, we agree with that heinous conduct. We're a middle power. And I was just told, for example, one of our better journalists, Serbisius, Antonio Serbisius, has called the position of Canada cowardly. And that's apt. It certainly explains positions. We were told we were going to be in a new, realistic world, and we're going to be principled and practical. Actually, all we're going to be is practical. Practical from the vantage point of, I hope that that angry, somewhat intoxicated individual who's doing these things doesn't look at me. So if he looks at you, you say, I agree with you, hoping he will go back to pummeling whoever he's pummeling and leave you alone. And so you have to have, it's no wonder that the prime ministers and presidents, etc., surround themselves with armies of people who can create some sort of rationalization of disreputable conduct. Again, this is the Taylor Report at CIUT 89.5 FM. A little later, we're going to be talking to David Jacobs, Toronto lawyer, who's practiced international law, has also written and lectured on the subject of the the rules, such as they are, of that are supposed to govern international relations and conduct. And one of the things we're going to be doing is reviewing the statements being made by various parties. And there are a lot of, I started off on a sour, somewhat bitter note. These are bitter times. But there are states that are speaking up. So when I mentioned that there's a lot of cowardice and there's a lot of opportunism and there's a tremendous amount of dishonesty on the part of governments, at the same time, there are governments and leaders who are speaking out. Probably the most remarkable one is that of the mayor of New York. And, you know, New York is like a country. It is one of the international centers, cultural, political, with a vast population. It is kind of the core or key to the American population. Everyone knows that you have to take into account the views of a mayor or a leader in New York City. That it is, you know, by the way, it's a kind of almost a sort of twin of Toronto in terms of the population, where they were born, where they're from. They have about the same percentage. New York and Toronto have almost exactly the same percentage of citizens who were born abroad and are in all great cities are always a combination of nationalities and languages. That's part of their greatness. If the idea that great cities are made by one people is not true, never has been true, by the way. Even in the ancient times, the leading citizens were usually had tens, hundreds of servants. Those servants weren't from the city. They had been brought there in slavery, chains, etc., or they just came. And that's been, and it's true of Toronto, it's true of New York. The first matter I think we probably ought to underline is how this began, that is, the attacks. And there's no other word for it than a betrayal, or the Russian spokesperson at the United Nations used the right language. He said it was those who were participating in the talks, which were described as positive. Let's remember, there were talks going on, sponsored or hosted by Oman, and they had reached a point where it was being remarked on that Iran, the Islamic Republic, was agreeing to language which was more advanced than in terms of the interests of the Western powers, trying to get Iran to make itself subject to subject to oversight, etc. So there was progress reported, progress. And Oman said the situation is, from their point of view, positive. So what happened? U.S. attacked and assassinated the leader of the Islamic Republic. And it was a coordinated, long-planned operation. And if you recall, 6 months passed, roughly, the same thing happened. There were talks, and Israel was involved in the talks, in the U.S., and the game was, they said that the U.S. said it was the arbitrator. It was the U.S. was going to oversee these talks to guarantee they would have a happy result. So the conversation was going on. And again, they said, and I think it was June, they said, well, you know, we're making progress. And what do you know? Israel attacked. And in a matter of 24 hours, 48 hours, the U.S. joined Israel in the attacks on the Islamic Republic. And that's to enter into talks, you have to have what they have called good faith. So in other words, it was the Russian representative at the Security Council said Iran was stabbed in the back. Rather blunt language, but what else was it? You ask, and Oman attempts to be to help because states in the region actually don't want a wider war. They don't want a war at all, and so the world is invited to get its hopes up. States, Canada included, are supposed to be desirous of a peaceful and stable region. So who disturbed the peace? In the case of last June, it was Israel and the United States. And at this time, the configuration changed, and the talks were going on. And who struck? The U.S. struck, and they violated all the principles of international law and responsibility to keep the peace, et cetera. They took advantage of that commitment to strike an opponent. It's called aggression, and the aggressor is answerable for that. So our leaders, the Prime Minister of Britain, Prime Minister of Canada, President of France, of course, the President of Germany, who's busy rebuilding now a great army to defend Europe. Does that sound familiar to you at all? A great army to defend Europe by taking it over. At any rate, Merz, they all agree that, yes, you can murder a leader of a sovereign state. Never mind the Charter of the United Nations. That's for suckers. You can murder them. You can attack, and you can invite them to talks and then attack them so as to put them as to give you an advantage. This is where we've gotten to. The murder itself of Khamenei is. It's striking in that this represents a growing trend now because of technology, because of the satellites, long-range missiles, and also this wonderful new weapon that called the drone, the capacity to actually hit somebody from great range to be able to observe them and strike them. This is where we've arrived, and it is unfolding as to how this feature of warfare may affect outcomes. But, of course, the policy itself is not new. I think listeners should remember that Ronald Reagan, who is the godfather of Donald Trump, I mean, political godfather. He wanted to assassinate Gaddafi, the leader of Libya. Libya, you will remember, was the most economically advanced of the country of North Africa. They had a leader who believed that the people should benefit from the resources of the country, and the Libyans did benefit and were united and had homes and roads and schools. And U.S. imperialism and the French decided that with the Soviet Union gone, that an actual middle power had no right to exist. I mean, it had the right only to bend the knee and serve or be destroyed. And so the United States decided to do that to Muammar Gaddafi of Libya. And, of course, I think most of our listeners will remember that Obama told Gaddafi to step down. He told Gaddafi he couldn't fly his planes to defend his country, and then they destroyed him. But they maybe have forgotten that Ronald Reagan and his administration, now we're talking way back, most of our listeners were not around when this happened, but in that first exercise of American power in the absence of any state that could neutralize that power or challenge them, that would be the Soviet, would do what it wanted. So they sent fighter planes, a little group, and bombed the home of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. They didn't kill him. They tried. The bombs, they did destroy the home. I actually visited that place, saw the damage. But Gaddafi, being a curious individual who liked to maintain his roots in the culture, he lived in a tent. He slept literally in a tent. And so he wasn't in the home that was blown up. And actually a CBS reporter pointed it out to me. I was in the third floor of the building. He said, look out the window. I said, I heard there was a tent. He says, come here. And then we both stood on the remains of a bathroom on a tub and looked over at the fence, and there was the tent where Gaddafi had been. There were several members of Gaddafi's family were killed in that raid, and we got the first taste of what is now called Trumpism, because an adopted girl, daughter of Gaddafi, I don't know the story of why, how she happened to be an adopted daughter, was killed. And so Reagan's staff appeared at the podium to explain that they had tried to kill Gaddafi. And the reporter said, what about this news that his daughter, adopted daughter, was killed in your raid on Gaddafi? And the answer was, we didn't see the adoption papers. And then they all chuckled. They thought that was quite amusing. So when you watch Trump, who has the same kind of macabre idea about what is funny, and he and all those around him, they always chuckle when he says something really nasty about any individual or another state, if he calls them dirty names. You all know the names he applied to Asia and Africa, where he called them, I won't use the word. And people are aware. He said that they were, you know, basically worthless. And they all chuckle. So the chuckling began in that sense with Ronald Reagan. And policy of killing leaders has been there all along. Now there is something we want to play, and we're going to be talking to David Jacobs in a little bit. But we have this thing of what the excuse to attack a country. Get a load of this: because a country is experiencing social strain as a result of your policy to deny them the ability to trade, to block them from being able to have an economy, and then your assaults on their economy to the extent that they are able to sustain themselves, you assault them. And then when you create as a result, I mean, the whole goal of a sanction is to make the people uncomfortable and to cause them or and try to inspire them to attack their leaders. When you do that, the state has to try to keep order. And when in that process, then you say, oh, they're using force on their own people. That was Obama's little story about Libya, which had been a prosperous country till America shut it down and attacked it. They used a silly childhood playground language. Oh, they're killing their own people. States, that's what a state does everywhere on earth. The state is there to maintain the system. And so if there is trouble, the state exercises its authority, rightly or wrongly. I'm not saying they're right. I'm saying that that's what states do. It's done in the United States. It historically has been done often. In France, we've had thousands, sometimes millions in the street, and they didn't get anywhere, and they got beaten up by the police. And in the case of the Algerians years ago, they were slaughtered. And nobody said, oh, they're killing their own people. I suppose they would say, those aren't Frenchmen, you see. You get to kill those people. But we want you to hear this bit. I want to point, this is the Secretary of the Treasury in the United States, asked by a congressman, what are we doing to try to help change things in Iran? And he tells the congressperson that they had just undermined the currency of Iran with the intention of getting crowds into the street to justify their policy of hegemony and violence towards the government of Iran. It's just, this is the Secretary of the Treasury, and his name is Bessant, Scott Bessant, and he's answering a question from a congresswoman. So we'll play that now.
The Treasury, and what we have done is created a dollar shortage in the country. At a speech at the Economic Club of New York in March, I outlined the strategy. It came to a swift and I would say grand culmination in December when one of the largest banks in Iran went under. There was a run on the bank. The central bank had to print money. The Iranian currency went into free fall. Inflation exploded, and hence we have seen the Iranian people out on the street. We will continue monitoring all the partners, all the Iranian partners. The good news, Senator, is that we have seen, and we can see it, with our fencing, the Treasury, and what we have to do.
There you have it. So they manipulated the currency of Iran, and what do you know? People run into the streets because banks close, and they did that deliberately. We're going to be talking to David Jacobs later. I'll come back to that point about how, in the history of warfare, destroying the currency, undermining and creating inflation, et cetera, has been a part of every war that ever happened. This is the Tater Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM, and David Jacobs has joined us. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing well. How are you, Phil?
Very well. Despite everything, all of us are suffering from the anxieties of watching these events and feeling relatively powerless. I hope people will begin to find ways to complain about what's going on. Policies that are being undertaken. I have to ask you, I know that you're a student of international affairs. You've talked about wars and the legal framework in which governments claim to be operating when they carry out assaults on other countries. And I know you've been reviewing the various responses around the world. And so can you tell us, what have you noticed that stands out that people we need to know here?
Well, there's certainly no unity in the West supporting Trump's actions. Our Prime Minister Carney talked some weeks ago in Davos about how middle powers have to sort of make their own way, given what he called the rupture from the rules-based international order, whatever that meant, beforehand. The problematic is that our Prime Minister Carney hasn't followed through on that, and in fact, by supporting this rupture with what I'm going to call international law, the international law that's been established for a long time, but really codified in the UN Charter 1945. By going along with that, he's actually on the other side of the rupture. Don Davies, who's the interim president of the New Democratic Party in Canada, put it very succinctly. He said, and I'll quote, "Trump's attack on Iran violates UN rules Canada has agreed to uphold. It contradicts numerous values Prime Minister Carney claimed he supported in Davos, endorsing illegality, violence, and destruction over dialogue and peaceful resolution is not what Canadians were promised or support." And I think that's a powerful statement. And
it is, by the way. Isn't that nice, that the clarity of it, as opposed to it diving in and talking about things they know nothing about, like the mood of the people and all that, just actually laying out the law?
Yes, it is. I mean, when you're talking about that, about the mood of the people, Glenn Greenwald, I think, is the one that's pointed out that every single war started by the United States, from Vietnam, Iraq, Grenada, Afghanistan, Libya, every single illegal invasion starts off with a litany of alleged abuses that the target enemy government is carrying out, usually in lurid, very lurid terms. Before the in the escalation of the Vietnam War, we were told that Ho Chi Minh and the what is now the government of Vietnam were carrying out horrendous abuses, all the usual stuff about killing children and torture and this, that, and the other thing. And we know before the Iraq attack, the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had, Netanyahu went to the United Nations with a crude drawing of a bomb about how close Netanyahu was to getting nuclear weapons. By the way, it's since 1997. By the way,
they did that to Gaddafi. I'm just remembering. They made Gaddafi prove to them he had no way to defend himself, and then they attacked him.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I recall being on a CBC debate myself at the time of the attack on Iraq, and I made a quip that the reason you know that Iraq didn't have any weapons of mass destruction was that the U.S. was preparing for war against it. Just a joke, really. But
by the way, that got to be common currency. That I remember various people like Greenwald pointing that out at the time.
Yeah. So they gin up the population every single time to support war, by claiming all kinds of atrocities on the other side. And frankly, I don't know how successful that is this time, because the rationale for going to war and the it's been so murky and contradictory. I'm not sure people are buying it the way they did in the past, or at least not a lot of people. But again, to go back to Don Davies' comments and to...
That's the NDP leader.
Interim leader of the NDP, and Mark Carney's comments about middle powers. Well, it's not that middle powers can do nothing, and a lot of the middle powers, important middle powers, have come up with statements. So For example, and if you don't mind me reading something, I'll try and pause them
Please.
Down and not say the whole thing. But Pedro Sanchez, the Prime Minister or President of Spain, said, we reject unilateral military action of the U.S. and Israel, which represents an escalation and contributes to a more uncertain and hostile international order. Now, he did condemn the actions of Iran as well, but not in the same terms. And he says, we can't afford another prolonged and devastating war in the Middle East. We demand an immediate de-escalation of full respect for international law. Similarly, President Catherine Colonnelly of Ireland said, may I join with all those who've expressed such grave concerns following today's strikes on Iran by the U.S. and Israel and Iran's retaliatory strikes. The normalization of war, including the invasion at will of sovereign states, is a path that only leads to destruction and loss of life. Even in Canada, in the Liberal Party, we've had some voices of dissent. Lloyd, to some extent, anyway, Lloyd Axworthy said, I think in the Toronto Star, Lloyd Axworthy, one of the grand old men of the Liberal Party, said that Canada once rejected America's aggressive, unlawful policy. Today, Mark Carney embraced it. Mm-hmm. You have the Pope. The Pope expressed deep concern over escalating violence in the Middle East following U.S. and Israeli airstrikes on Iraq, which have also resulted in the death of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and Tehran's subsequent retaliatory attacks. The Pope said, stability and peace are not built with mutual threats, nor with weapons which sow destruction, pain, and death, but only through reasonable, authentic, and responsible dialogue. He warned of a tragedy of enormous proportions.
Mm-hmm. And he's from Chicago.
That's right. That's right.
By the way, what did Mamdani say? I just flashed through my mind that I was going to mention Mamdani earlier. What did he say in New York? I talked about New York. I forgot to say what he said.
I'm gonna have
you don't
to
have to quote here. Him. I mean, if you could just outline, it's
no,
up to you.
No, he said, as I recall it, he called Trump to tell him this was an illegal war, and he made the comment that it was in. It was an illegal war. I could try and find his comments quickly, but he has been very unequivocal about it.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, that's a mayor of certainly the best known American city, and probably internationally the most important for sure. And he's completely contradicting the President of the United States.
Well, that's right. I do have his quote. He says, today's military strikes by the U.S. and Israel mark a catastrophic escalation in an illegal act of war of aggression, bombing cities, killing civilians, opening up a new theater of war. Americans do not want this. Americans do not want another war in pursuit of regime change. We want an answer to the affordability crisis. We want peace.
And, gee, I can think of some Canadian politicians could take some lessons from that.
Yeah, for
practically
sure.
Everybody who holds office or wants it, they should listen to Mr. Mamdani.
It's the same in the United States. You have strong comments by Republicans, by people like Bernie Sanders and so on. Of course, on the other hand, you've got Lindsey Graham, who attacked Norway, Sweden, Denmark, not because they outright opposed the U.S. war, but because they were lukewarm about it and said basically they won't get involved and so on. So he attacked them as being, I've forgotten the exact words he used. But I was saying I'm not sure.
See, that'll be a new basis for Trump's wanting to take over Greenland. Is it?
Yes.
Denmark actually coughed while he was talking.
Well, it's true. Of course, if he takes over Greenland, then he has Greenland, Alaska, and what's left between those countries and the United States is the 51st state of Canada. You know?
I want to ask you about we have this really deplorable character, the Prime Minister of Britain, Dahmer. He, of course, just jumped in, jolly, good luck and all that. And he says his planes are in the air. I don't know what that means. But meanwhile, there was an election, and his party was in the election. And what kind of important, the people of the UK are taking notice. What happened in the election? And could you talk about that?
Well, the election was a tremendously important election. And again, if we're looking at how people are reacting to these things, there was a by-election held in a constituency called Gorton and Denton, which is in Manchester. It's a primarily working-class community, has a large amount of immigrants and Muslims and so on in that community. And the press and media and so on said, oh, it's going to be a tight race with Labour and so on. It was not tight at all. It was won by the Green Party, by a very young working-class woman called Hannah Spencer.
The Green Party won the election.
It won the election with close to 15,000 votes. The next down was an extreme right-wing party in the UK, a Reform Party, very, very much pro-US, pro-Israel, and so on. And they came away with 10,500 votes. Labour came in third with 9,000 votes. And the Conservative Party, which had governed Britain until recently, had 700 votes in that constituency. And Hannah Spencer's a young woman, a plumber, and she let on in her election speech, her acceptance speech, that even during the election, because I suppose she wasn't sure about the outcome, she went through for her certification as a plasterer. So she was a working-class tradesperson.
She's a plasterer and a plumber.
And a plumber.
She has the papers.
That's right. People say she's now going to be the most popular plumber in the UK after Mario. that's a joke about the Mario Brothers, Super Mario. In her speech, of course, she said, well, I won't do the Manchester accent. She's got a great Manchester accent. She said, I'm going to, I've got to disappoint my customers. I can't finish the work because I'm going to be in Parliament. very young woman. But most people have seen that as a referendum on the Labour Party's closeness to the U.S. and Israel. Even the Green Party leader, Zach Polanski.
Say Polanski, like the famous exactly. director?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Well, he is Jewish. He's anti-Zionist. He's a young gay man from Liverpool. And his statements, by the way, about the attack on Iraq, and I'll read that, it is absolutely outrageous that they can be at the negotiating table, and then our prime minister puts out a statement that actually condemns Iran for a retaliatory attack as opposed to Israel and America that started the bombing in the first place. He has also, by the way, called for the United Kingdom to cut ties with the United States and end the special relationship because of this.
This is the leader of the Green Party whose member walked away with that election.
Yes, and it's the Green Party.
He says, end the special relationship with the U.S.?
Yes. Yeah, he did that in a recent...
Well, Starmer will have him arrested.
That's right.
People be damned.
Yes, recent interview with the BBC, he called the United States and Israel rogue states. And urged the Prime Minister to get out on TV and condemn these illegal and unprovoked attacks. But by the way, the latest information is that Sam is going to let the Americans use UK bases for its attack on Iraq. He's claiming that they'll limit them to just defensive actions, which it's just amazingly farcical. And so, as to the middle powers, so you have Spain, Ireland, Mexico. The president of Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum, has been highly critical of this, and has said she lamented the loss of strength of the United Nations, accusing the UN of failing to fulfill its purpose due to the imposition of countries with greatest military power, and how the organization acts in the face of the conflict, and claimed that the UN has to reclaim its role in multilateral diplomacy to prevent the escalation of conflict. She called for an international call for peace, and said that Mexico would be willing to help.
This is Mexico.
This is Mexico, another middle power, right?
Yes, a real one. No, I think it might say it's a real one, an actual middle power. They don't call and congratulate or offer to be in the background and make a little money off a war. Quite remarkable. Well, David, we're really grateful that it's a lot of information. I have to say, we need your comments because, in fact, the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail aren't making a list of those sort of comments and letting our population know, for example, about that election and that the leadership of a rising party in Britain would be talking about breaking relations with the U.S. over its conduct. So we're really grateful to be talking to you, and we thank you very much. Go ahead.
If I've got a minute, let me just put out a couple of things. One thing about the Green Party in the U.K., from being a small party and certainly non-existent some decades ago, it's now swelled to 200,000 members, which is huge, even in a country like the U.K. The other thing I should say, which just unequivocally so, and maybe I should back off. I was watching the CBC yesterday where Rosemary Barton had a variety of guests talking about things. And she had invited a retired U.S. Military leader, general, I believe. And she asked him, firstly, a rather bizarre question to start off with, which was the timing right to bomb Iran? And then she went, and then she had noted that he had been a critic of Trump and so on, and generally asked his thoughts. I'm not sure whether or not she was surprised by the answer, but his answer was really unequivocal. He says, you cannot attack another country unless there is an imminent threat of attack from Iran. And he said, there was no imminent attack from Iran. Iran is not a threat to the United States. I was grateful for the clarity. But I have to say, you know, it's very hard, I think, to find an international law scholar that will say that this is anything other than illegal. And just to finish off, it's very, very simple. Since World War II, at least, but there was some truth in World War II, but certainly since the UN Charter, there are only two ways of legitimately going to war. One is under the aegis of the UN Security Council, which has investigated a conflict between nations, determined that there is a credible threat to international peace and security, and that all peaceful measures have been exhausted, and they list them. And for those of you listeners who are members of trade unions and so on, you'd recognize them. You know, firstly, there's got to be a mediation and then arbitration. Legal means have to be exhausted. That's number one. That obviously hasn't happened here, and it has to be done with the approval of the Security Council of the United Nations, which could convene a military committee to deal with it. But the other way, and that what's being claimed about self-defense, is that self-defense is an exceptionally narrow exception. You have to have troops ready, threatening to pour across your borders in an imminent attack. And imminent means imminent. It doesn't mean there's a potential for something that might happen in 20 years' time. And obviously that threshold is not even close to being met, as the retired American military officer said the other day. What we're witnessing in real time is a return to, as many people have said, the law of the jungle. And that doesn't bode well for us or anybody.
No, not at all. David, thank you very, very much. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I think we have a little bit of Bob Dylan to put us in the right mood here for this, for what is taking place.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. A room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard. And it's a hard rain, they're gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue eyes?
He's talking to the blue-eyed boy. That's appropriate. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I want to thank David Jacobs for the that commentary and information. Media fails us, and at this, because it's... We're in an international crisis, and those in charge of media make sure that it is primarily done with a strong propaganda edge. Our media always becomes what I guess they would call it patriotic, which doesn't help, because what we actually need is raw information, but that is not why our media exists. It's actually privately owned, and it will reflect management. And they will be writing editorials and chewing on hearts and enjoying the bloodshed. It is the West once again defining itself as superior, and the rules of rights of nations to self-determination, sovereignty, do not apply, and it's the for the narcissistic powers that be, they must be seen to be prevailing, and it creates a sense of superiority, if not moral or ethical, but superiority, so that crushing people is proof that we are advanced, seems to be the prevailing view of modern colonialism. This, by the way, is colonial exercise. The please remember that Islamic Republic came into being when a Shah who had been installed in power by U.S. and British intelligence working on behalf of Western oil interests removed an elected president. I'm talking about the fall of the Shah, but what preceded it, there had been years of hegemony by the British and the Americans after overthrowing the democratically elected president of Iran, and then, of course, putting the oil interests, opening the doors for British petroleum, and eventually, because of the nakedly obvious fact that the government was being run by someone loyal to and serving U.S. interests, U.S.-British interests, U.S. military, remember, had bases in Iran. By the way, very important historical note, since this America is very interested in the nuclear potential, that is for domestic use, just like Premier Ford is talking about nuclear in Ontario. It's widely present in the Western world. The Shah of Iran began and developed the nuclear centers that the United States is talking about now, the power development of that nuclear power. And this is for civilian use. And now it's a crime for those who are running the Islamic Republic to have what the Shah had. They overthrew the Shah. The people did that, by the way. It wasn't a war. I mean, the people actually removed the Shah. And it was one of the most massive popular uprising in recorded history. It was, in a sense, a walkover in the sense that the people totally rejected a Western installed leader and put in power someone who reflected the popular and the historical Iran. That would be the Ayatollah Khomeini. So the nuclear business was there. Something very important was said at the Security Council that must be underlined. It was pointed out. Again, it was a Russian minister. By the way, others might have. I was only watching and picking up portions of it. But here's what was said. It doesn't really matter who said it. This is what was said. That when the United States or Israel says, oh, we can't let them have nuclear weapons. Oh, I'm sorry. I also have to add also Prime Minister Carney said it. The Iran must not be allowed to have nuclear weapons. Well, that is absurd, because the premise is all wrong. I mean, as was pointed out at the United Nations Security Council, the United Nations has been engaged with this subject through the International Atomic Energy agency, which is established by the UN, has been engaged with this issue in Iran for years and years. And they have, under that agency, they are the ones who have inspected and determined and analyzed the status of the nuclear energy such as it is in Iran. In other words, it's already formally established, and the only authority Certainly Tel Aviv is not an authority. Washington is not an authority. They have nothing at all to go on but their own heated rhetoric. The fact is that there is a UN agency that has that responsibility. And what have they determined? They say there is no development of nuclear weapons. There's no evidence of that. None. Zero. All we have is two powers who both have nuclear weapons. They both have them. And they're the ones who are saying, this country can't have them. Well, that country is the only one of the three who can say they don't and also have the UN as their witness. So no wonder we're now in the jungle, because the people carrying out this aggression are indifferent to the truth. They are indifferent to legal processes to resolve it. In the case of Israel, it's rarely talked about. I don't know why regular programmers and mainstream media don't talk about a fact that Israel has nuclear weapons. Now, we have a thing called the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Anyone with weapons or wishes to sustain a world in which they are not, nuclear weapons do not spread, there's a membership. Israel is not a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Not a member. They have never been inspected. Never. Of course, the U.S. is the supernuclear power. They have never been inspected. And if you were to say, we're going to inspect you, the United Nations thinks you ought to be, you know, like everybody else. No. And matter of fact, Russia and China and others who have been engaged, who do have nuclear weapons, talk to each. They have had a common agreement to deal with each other and recognize the need to limit the possession and to, if they can, reduce and eliminate nuclear weapons, because I have to tell you, it's bad for your sinuses if the nuclear weapons are used. You won't have to worry about anything. So, but that is not accepted by Israel and the United States. So they, of course, should be the ones to attack a state that does not have nuclear weapons. And the more they prove that they don't, the more likely they are to be attacked. Which is, you know, frankly, the part that ought to interest everybody, but it does not. In the minutes remaining, and I think they might have one or two, I guess I got one. I want to remind you again, yes, the U.S. undermined the economy of Iran to create crowds of people so that they could say they're on the side of the crowds of people. And they boasted about it. Now, I want to say again, all revolutions have been, that was the weapon of those who oppose them, is to try to destroy the currency. I recommend a novel by Victor Hugo called 93, and pointing out that the Prime Minister Pitt made destroying the currency of the revolutionary government of France. That was his policy, and he carried it out. It's as old as history. So with Hugo, that will be good enough. Read 93. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5, 33-45-78. Coming up.
Well, if I had my way, if I had a whole week of fun, if I had a Lord just build it down, well, I don't want a woman, fine, fair, a pleasant look, a cold black hair. All the game goes down to mine. I first saw the woman, I look so fine. Oh, where the wind turned me, I can't tell. A daughter of